Hey everybody, it's Talking Jake here, and I want to tell you about a new podcast and video series you're not going to want to miss. The Deal. Every week, A-Rod and Bloomberg reporter Jason Kelly speak with big-time athletes, entertainers, executives, Maria Sharapova, Strahan, Jeter, and more. The Deal takes you behind the scenes into those worlds of sports, media, and entertainment. From Bloomberg Podcasts and Bloomberg Originals, you can listen to The Deal on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Bleeding Blue, a show about the history of the New York Football Giants. My name is Justin Penick, alongside one of my best friends in the world, Nicky Snacks. We are coming to you from the warehouse, John Boy Media Warehouse in Jersey City. It's kind of a shithole.
It's a dump.
Yeah, it's a shithole.
I've seen a lot of reports about all the money that John Boy Media is getting.
It's out there.
And this is a dump.
It's out there. I think that's on purpose, though.
You know, I like that. It's like that
grit.
It's that grit, that authenticity to it. It's nice.
You know who else showed grit?
Are you going to talk about the 1986 New York Giants?
The 1986-1987 New York Football Giants. And we're talking about them today through a movie review of America's Game.
Right. So let's preface by saying that you have seen three, maybe four movies in your life?
Correct, yes. So I'm the perfect person to turn to for a movie review.
Correct. And I think this is a really cool opportunity for you to understand what good movie making is about.
That's a great point.
What did I do?
I think that's better.
Is it?
Yeah, it's much better.
Can you hear me?
Don't fucking touch it.
Well,
the movies I've seen, the other guys, Happy Gilmore...
You've seen Happy Gilmore?
Yes, I've seen Happy Gilmore.
That's a surprise to me.
Avatar, The Dark Knight. Those are the four movies I've seen in my
life. And the other guys.
I said the other guys.
Oh, I didn't.
That was the first movie
I've
seen. That was one of the best movies I've ever seen. I quote it all the time.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so that's what we're doing the next couple weeks. We're doing it the next 3 weeks. The Giants have won four Super Bowls. We are not doing the 2011 America's Game movie review because I have something planned special for the final episode of the offseason. So the next 3 weeks, I hope you enjoyed the Big 50.
Yeah, I mean, I had a blast doing it.
Yeah, so, I think our best episodes, producer Julian would agree, and I think you would also agree that our best episodes come from when we are, like, reading books and stuff like that.
I want to say a word about Julian, though,
sure.
Real quick.
A little outdated since...
Doesn't matter.
The Rangers won or lost.
It doesn't matter.
Multiple
weeks. I'm going to say it now.
Sure.
Fuck Julian. I hate that fucking kid
so
much. He's got a miserable haircut.
Mm-hmm.
He said he doesn't have a girlfriend, and I want to know why. Because when you look at him and he goes like this with his hair, looks like a fucking idiot.
It's a mess.
So it's a
mess.
Disgusting mess.
Mess
he looks like shit. I hate him.
Okay, fair.
And this is very much outdated, so whatever. Doesn't matter.
All right, so let's...
Fuck you, Julian.
Let's get to it. Now,
let's do it.
America's Game. You love that series as a whole.
Yes.
So what's your favorite... Should I say what's your favorite movie of all time, or what is the best produced movie of all time?
The 2007 America's Game of the New York Giants.
Which one is it? Best produced or just best movie of all time?
Both. Yeah.
Tell me why.
Because to me, that's the most special moment of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And when you watch America's Game, you can hear the beginning music is just like...
Yeah.
You get chills.
Mm-hmm.
You really do. It's like... I can't even do it I can't even do it out loud.
Look at the violin.
Yeah, it's like a violin. And it's showing like the pictures of the three guys that are going to be in it.
Yeah, the Super Bowl ring.
The Super Bowl ring.
I am a sucker.
The Lombardi trophy at the end.
It's for Super Bowl rings.
Yes.
I can just look at them all day.
It's all so perfect. So like I was seven when I saw that. I remember watching it when it came out.
Yeah. Okay.
And I have all the DVDs, which are obsolete nowadays. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't even matter. We could just go on YouTube and watch it if we want. But that 07 one was just so unbelievable to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched 07 and 11 before I ever watched 86 and 90.
Right.
And then when I saw 86 and 90, I'm like, wow, this is, like, to this day, it's still an unbelievable production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this 86, 87 team was the first of the, what do you call it?
Well, it's the first time.
Not a trilogy. It's a...
The first time that the Giants won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, but there's a better way to put it.
There is a better way to put it.
But we're not going to do that.
But the opening scene is that music.
Yes.
And then you basically, it's the parallel of the Giants when they won their last championship like 30 years prior.
Right. Before the Super Bowl.
Before their last championship.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the Giants won their first Super Bowl.
Yes.
So it's showing the dichotomy of those two shots of, you know, celebrating those wins. And then especially going into Bill Parcells of what he was doing like 30 years prior and where he was and stuff like that. It gave me chills right from the start.
Yeah, and it's so funny. And I love how they start off on... They always start off on a bad note. Have you noticed that?
Yes.
Always. So it was like, what was it, 84, 85 when Parcells started, what's his name? Scott Bruner?
Mm-hmm. Or even before that, they showed the... Miracle in Meadowlands.
1970, yes.
Which my only comment of that is same play-by-play guy on the radio for the Eagles, still there today.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Touchdown, Eagle! Like he sounded old in 1978.
Yeah. Well, hopefully his...
I like his voice.
No, I don't.
Okay, fair.
He's from Philly, so...
I'm also a known Eagles fan, so...
I know you are, and I don't forgive you for it.
Yeah.
But it's very... Yes, but that was a long time before they started, you know... The Parcells era and everything.
Right.
And they start off with Scott Bruner. Mm-hmm. And Parcells said he starts Scott Bruner before Phil Simms. And Phil Simms, you know, he was a high draft pick. He was the guy to be the next franchise quarterback. And Parcells even admits it. He goes, that was a colossal mistake.
Starting him over Simms.
And they went 3-14. Right, I think that was the record. They played 17.
It was bad. It was a lot. It was bad football. They didn't play 17 games.
No, what was it for 3-11? Maybe
it was bad football.
Yes,
and 3-11 sounds better.
I don't have it off the top of my head, but yeah,
we actually talked about it in the Big 50. You know, it was after Parcells' first season where he was like, "I'm doing things my way."
Yes,
and that's when he changed from being like the... Now it doesn't say this in America's Game, but we know this from reading the Big 50.
Right.
He kind of changes his coaching philosophy, and that is when you hear, like, just how confrontational Parcells with some players. He was a little bit more, you know, conservative in his approach, and Lawrence Taylor talks about that, where sometimes he'd be on your ass, sometimes he would kind of let me go. So LT talked about that a lot in America's Game as well, but Parcells basically did things his way starting in that 84 season.
Yes, that 84, 85, when he's like, I you know, colossal mistake, I'm glad it didn't cost me.
Yeah.
So then the next season he goes in, he goes, Simms, we're going to do this, but if we're going to do it, we're going to do it my way.
Yep.
And that's exactly what happened. And we talked about this in the Big 50 and how we, you know, the way Parcells transformed as a coach from player's coach to hard nose.
Yeah.
And that all ties into it. And him and Simms did not have the world's greatest relationship.
No.
And you can hear it, as you guys probably all have, the things they had said to each other on the sidelines.
Yeah. LT on Phil Simms, the type of guy who drinks with his pinky up. So, you want to know how we were talking with the Big 52, how Bill Parcells was the type of coach who knew how to approach each individual player. And I think Phil Simms being this, you know, he looks like a California kid, you know, with the blonde hair, he wore the sunglasses. I think Phil Simms was the kind of guy, because he was this type of person to begin with, he needed that fiery coach to really get on his ass, to light a fire under his ass, and to also get that ego down a little bit, conserve that ego a little bit. And that is what Bill Parcells was. And Phil Simms even says it in America's Game now, they were kind of the same personality.
Yes.
So it was good that kind of Simms had that. And LT... Phil Simms, because they are very different in that regard, I think just it's culturally different too. You know, LT going to school down in the South and stuff like that, and, you know, Phil Simms coming in with this blonde hair, sunglasses type of mentality. And even after they won the Super Bowl, there was a period where Simms and LT just didn't talk. So
no, and it is. It's funny because you would expect your two franchise players to, I don't know, have a little bit of a relationship,
mm-hmm.
almost off the field too, and Those two just really didn't.
Yeah.
They're two completely different people. Phil Simms may have drank with his pinky up. Lawrence Taylor was snorting coke with his pinky up. So it's like, I mean, I'm sorry, but they were two completely different people.
Yeah.
And one was the leader of the offense. One was the leader of defense. One was the greatest football player of all time. And so those two kind of meshed together in a way where, you know, football is all about a team aspect of it.
Yep.
And to me, that's really cool. Because Eli and Strahan, it was never like that. You know, if we want to kind of present day compare it, you know, like they were never at odds. They were different people, but they were never like, you know, completely off the rails different or anything like that.
But I do think there is comparison with Eli and Simms in the regard of them just being kind of bad.
Well,
America's game really outlined how bad the passing game was.
Well, it was awful. They in 86, they relied on Joe Morris and their running game and their defense. That's how they won. And they won a lot in 86. Like we call them a great football team, but they had one aspect of their offense that was just non-existent.
Yeah. And they lost the home opener so they went 14-2 and they lost the home opener.
Yeah, and they were exactly. They were 0-1 to start. So they went 14-1 their next 15 games.
And something I didn't know, I mean, Lawrence Taylor has one of the best seasons of all time in 1986, MVP. 20 and a half sacks.
MVP.
But he was coming off an offseason where he was rehabilitating his way from drug usage, alcohol usage, whatever. And you have a comment on that.
Well, I No, I'm staying out of it.
You're staying out of it.
Staying out of it. Because I feel bad enough that I say the cocaine thing, because he really did have a problem. I don't want to.
No, but Bill Parcells and the team, they kind of said that they took care of it. LT did not go to rehab, and he said in the documentary that his rehab was going on the golf course.
Yes, so which I don't believe for a second. Like, Bill Parcells is sitting in front of like HBO cameras or whoever, NFL Films studio. Yeah. And he's sitting in front of the cameras like, well. And Lawrence Taylor's name is in the headlines for possession and everything like this. And Bill Parcells like, we had it under control and everything. No, he didn't.
When everybody else is saying that, you know, you put it, you swept it under the rug and stuff.
And Bill
Parcells,
no, we had it under. No, he didn't.
Yeah,
you didn't.
And they said week one against the Cowboys, Lawrence Taylor had an opportunity to prevent a touchdown, the game-winning touchdown against Herschel Walker, and he didn't.
And LT says it. Yeah. He goes. I quit.
Yeah.
I quit on the play. I let him score. And you could show. I don't know. We probably can't show it, but you could tell. He doesn't try. Yeah. Lawrence Taylor, are you kidding me? He's not trying against washed-up-ass Herschel Walker.
But then what happened? That's what I want to know. Like, they didn't explain, like, then he was just back and had like the best season for a defender ever at that time.
I could tell you what happened, but
You started doing coke again.
Uh-huh.
That's fair.
I mean, other explanation is there? You think something just clicked?
LT is not LT without coke.
Well, and it is true, though, because the season before, it was not a very good season for LT.
Yeah, no.
For Lawrence Taylor standards.
Yeah.
And then he comes out and has 20 and a half sacks and wins MVP. And I'm pretty sure he was the last defensive MVP in the NFL.
I'm sure that's still something.
I still think that's the case.
Such quarterback driven, even from then, you know, the 90s, et cetera, on. So I briefly mentioned how, you know, we were talking about how the passing game was bad.
Awful.
And like, so what I'm actually thinking while I'm watching America's game is I am thinking of Eli. And I am thinking of how similar, at least 07, you know, because, hey, 07, that regime.
I was going to say, you can't say 11.
That regime didn't win a Super Bowl yet. 1986, they didn't win a Super Bowl yet.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, they're having success in the playoffs. 1985, they made the playoffs, faced the 15-1 Chicago Bears. You know, hey, they felt like they could have won that game. And Joe Morris in the Joe Morris interview actually told us that game gave them fuel.
Yes.
Like Joe Morris, that next day after they lost to the Bears, he was back in the gym and guys were really motivated to get better. So they talked about that game. So I guess the circumstances are a little different where maybe Bill Parcells isn't necessarily on the hot seat, but Phil Simms probably is.
100%. But they were saying in America's game too that like people wanted to run Parcells out of town.
Yeah.
And it's kind of 86 and 07, the similarities are to me are very similar. The similarities are very similar. You hear that one?
Yeah, that was good.
What a dope.
It makes sense.
What a dope.
Makes sense.
But the QB and the head coach were like essentially on their last legs.
But especially, I mean, looking at the passing game and just how bad the passing game was at times.
Yes, correct. But I think the way that they both won too.
Yeah.
Although it's completely different. Well, not so much different. The Giants.
Grit. Defense.
running the football.
Run the ball.
Jacobs, Bradshaw,
timely,
Joe Morris.
Timely passing and taking care of the football. And that's what, I mean, Phil Sims, I mean, talk about timely passing, having, you know, what, going 22 for 25 with two drops in the Super Bowl?
You took the words right out of my mouth, because they talk about in America's Game where the passing game was so bad all season, and then he goes into the Super Bowl, and he has the highest completion percentage ever.
Yeah, and it's launched against Minnesota. Fourth quarter comeback.
Yes.
Which that was not really a theme of 2007, but a theme of 2011. But, you know, hey, how about this? You know, there was a theme of that 1986 season of comebacks. There was a theme of Road Warriors in 2007. Right. So that's another similarity, you can say. Similarities that are similar, some may say. But it was against the Minnesota Vikings towards the latter part of the season, where it was Bobby Johnson, wide receiver.
Bobby Johnson.
Has a sideline tippy-toe catch on a 4th-and-17, on a 4th-and-19. To pick up a first down, game-winning field goal, boom, Giants win that game, another fourth quarter comeback. And something that Bill Parcells says to Phil Sims towards the later end of the season, which very unconventional for 1986. It's actually something that Brian Daboll is telling Daniel Jones to do right now. Just let it rip.
Let it rip.
Just let it rip. Don't worry about having a turnover. And even, you know, imagine, you hear Joe Judge and Jason Garrett, how much they punished for making mistakes and trying to be so conservative. Imagine how it was in 1986, 1987, if you threw an interception, if you turned over the ball. You know, in those teams, it was actually, it's shocking to see 1990, 1991, that team averaged less than one turnover per game. So to hear Bill Parcells, even though that's his mentality of, you know, we're going to take good care of the play, you know, football, we're going to play fundamentals, to say, hey, you know, you can just let it rip. If you throw an interception, it's cool with it. I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
To hear that, and that kind of launched the passing game from there.
Exactly, because then Sims wasn't afraid to throw it into a tight window or throw it deep or anything like that. And it's funny you bring that up, because in 1990 and 1991, where they had less, you know, a turnover or less, Joe Clark in our spaces a few weeks back, about a month ago.
Yeah.
He was saying the same thing. He goes, they were so disciplined in that sense, but still we're running a functional offense in that time. So I think it's a pretty cool dichotomy that, you know, once the passing game wasn't there and Parcells is like, okay, well, this kid could throw. Sims could throw. He can make the plays. We have the guys to do it. Let him rip.
LT says towards the beginning of America's Game, Bill Parcells knew how to let his players play.
Yeah. And isn't that what you want in a coach?
Yes.
You don't want a coach that is trying to put, I guess, as Joe Judge would say, was it round
square pegs into round holes.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And, you know, his coaching staff didn't really do that, but
it's crazy
regardless.
But it's just so crazy how, and, you know, I know we talked about this a little bit last week with the whole Bill Belichick, Bill Belichick episode, and, you know, Tom Landry, Vince Lombardi, our last episode of the Big 50. You know, we talked about how how you just can't replicate what guys like Parcells, guys like Belichick. There's so many people that do try to replicate it,
and that's where that's where they go wrong.
Yes, and it's so tough to do. You know, Bill Parcells being that strickler, while also at the same time stickler, while also at the same time, you know, letting his guys play. So it's just awesome.
And again, like that's one of the things that he learned.
Yeah,
and we talked about this. He went from a player's coach to a stickler.
Yeah.
So, but he definitely had a mixture of both towards the end. He had to have, because those players, well, maybe the 80s and 90s were a little bit different, but still.
I want an entire documentary on Bill Parcells, Phil Sims interactions, because that's basically what America's Game was. Just them them fucking screaming at each other.
Yeah. LT was like LT, the greatest football player ever, was almost like an afterthought.
Yeah. And one of my favorites was Bill Parcells is yelling at Phil Sims 10 yards before he gets to the sideline.
Yeah.
And he's like, shut the fuck up. You fucking coach. I'll fucking coach. You fucking play. And Sims is like, I didn't say anything.
Yeah. Shut the fuck down, Sims.
Yeah. And Sims is like, I regret some of the spats that we had. And I guarantee you, half the stuff that's actually out there in public, we don't know the half of it.
Oh, no.
I'm sure they went after it. And Parcells says that Sims flirted with the line of, you know, being disrespectful or, you know, it being appropriate. It had to go over. It had to go over, because especially hearing from Sims about how he got benched and the things that he said and requesting that trade, Sims had to go over the line.
That's another thing, too. People forget, Sims did request the trade. What was it, 85, when he played?
Yeah, when he got benched.
When he got benched for Scott Brunner.
Yeah.
He requested a trade.
The front office, George Young, said no.
No. Well, I'd hope so. George Young, who we've talked about, was, you know, he had all the say, and he drafted Phil Sims.
It wouldn't surprise me if they did it, though, because Sims, again, let's compare it to today. You know, Sims missing, having season-ending injuries, multiple of them. You know, that's what Daniel Jones has had.
Yeah, it's
basically
fair. That's fair.
So, you know, it's would you blame anybody if anybody wanted to trade Daniel Jones right now? No. You wouldn't blame anybody.
Well, I would blame everybody because we get a seventh round pick back. It doesn't really seem like worth it, but
yeah.
Anyway,
I always thought
that was crazy though, because now you see Phil Sims now, he's like that soft spoken, like, you know, even in America's game, he's like that soft spoken guy. He's gonna go out
intense.
And request a trade. Yeah, well, I like that about Sims. He's got that quiet intensity.
Yeah. Some other stories, Bill Parcells starting dumping out garbage on the defense after allowing 17 unanswered points against the bad Packers team the last game of the regular season. They needed to win that game to get home field advantage.
Home field advantage, yeah.
So the defense towards the latter end of the second half allows 17 unanswered points. So when they get back into the locker room, there was a few getting back to the locker room funny stories from America's game.
Yeah.
Bill Parcells goes to the offense, says, I think we need to score 45 to win this game because this defense is just allowing points left and right. They scored 55 points. And then he goes to the defense, takes a garbage can that's just full of fucking garbage, starts dumping it on him. You guys belong here with the rest of this shit. And then he left.
Yeah.
They didn't allow another point in the second half.
Another point. It's almost like you haven't seen Remember the Titans, but.
No, I have.
Oh, you have.
That's the fifth movie I've seen in my life.
When he goes, I don't want them to gain another yard.
Mm-hmm.
They don't gain another yard.
Yep.
And Bill Parcells dumping shit. Doesn't say anything else in the halftime. Walks into the coach's room, and they don't give him another point.
Nope.
Some coaches are built different.
Then Harry Carson dumped Gatorade on Bill Parcells after the game.
That's right, yes. And that, see, now we can talk about the origins of the Gatorade dump.
Yep.
That's where it comes from.
Boom. Club 13 was also another funny story.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Morris talked about this, that one of the toughest games, and the run that he is most proud of, Joe Morris, came in that game where during the regular season game, the 49ers-Giants, when they played, they only had 13 rushing yards. And that's when Bill Parcells nicknamed the offensive lineman that they were facing the 49ers during the wild card round, the first round of that 86 playoffs. And he's like, all right, Club 13. And then they kicked ass. Then they wound up kicking the 49ers ass 49-3.
To me, like all these things that we hear in America's game, and especially like other things that we've heard, he's got to be up there for greatest motivator ever.
And again, it depends. He made it. He altered it from who needed it.
Well, exactly, but like, and it's a personal touch. Like he's offending people, and it's like offending the profession that they're doing.
Yeah.
And questioning, like, what are you doing? Yeah. And then he's just stepping back and then letting him do it.
Yeah, I will say, as a lineman,
responded.
As a lineman, I would shut down if a coach, like, came up to me, like, personally. But if they attacked the group, which I think, as an offense lineman, attacking the group, like, having that mentality of, like, these are my guys, and you attack us.
Different story.
Well, fuck you. I'm going to fucking show you.
Right.
So that is a much different story. And that's what he did with the old lineman, and they did it with a good 49er team.
Yes, they did. A very good 49er team. And he did that with a group of people. But what always cracks me up, because I've always thought, my father said this too, that he was just a master motivator. Like,
yeah.
He, not only just a good football coach, X's and O's and everything, defensively, offensively, everything. Like, he was a great football coach. But the way he was able to motivate his players was on another level.
Yeah.
And when I look at Phil Sims, you look at and you're like, okay, this guy's a pussy. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
You look at him. You're like, okay, this guy's a pussy.
And he talks shit, and he hasn't backed it up yet in his NFL career.
Exactly. And then you got Bill Parcells, who, again, we're saying is his master motivator, gets under his skin, and Sims goes out and does what he does the rest of the year. So, unbelievable.
NFC Championship game. They focus a lot of time in the playoffs in the
in
America's game. I mean, there's also, you know, they talked about Mark Bavaro breaking his jaw against the Saints, which we've talked about that before. I made a breakdown video on that. Obviously, they talked about Bavaro carrying Ronnie Lott the second play of the second half of the regular season game against the 49ers, but they spend a lot of time in the playoffs, and a lot of fun stories come out of that. So, a quote that comes before the NFC Championship game, I get that they're playing Washington, they're playing the Redskins. Mm-hmm. I'm scared of spiders, snakes, and the IRS before the NFC Championship game, because Bill Parcells was asked, you mentioned that you he predicted that he would see the Redskins again in the playoffs. Uh-huh. He predicted that. So they asked him, are you scared of the Redskins? I'm scared of spiders, snakes, and the IRS.
The IRS part always makes me laugh. Mm-hmm.
He also, did you hear that more than the way that he talks now, he had such like this Jersey thick.
Yes, very much so. It's almost like a lisp in a sense. But
he always chews gum, too.
Always chews gum. Yes. But he's got that Northern Jersey accent. And people always go...
So thick.
It's very thick. And people mistake it for a New York accent.
No.
It's different. When people say me, I got a New... I don't have a New York... Do I have a New York accent?
No, it's Jersey.
Thank you.
Since people don't know the difference. No, people aren't intelligent enough.
Because people are fucking idiots.
Yeah.
Like Julian. So, but when you hear him talk, you can easily hear it. Especially from where... If you're from where we're from.
Yes.
You know, like if you hear him from afar, oh God, he's definitely from the Northeast. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but where? But where we're from, you know exactly what that accent is.
That's right.
Thank you, Bill.
So ironic that a coach who dumped garbage on his team, now that they won the NFC Championship game, there is just garbage being dumped on them by Giant Stadium.
Yes. Not in a bad way.
Not in a bad way. It's just the...
It's just throwing shit.
Well, I think because of how windy it was that game, too.
And there's a great video of that, like Parcells in the puffy jacket, and you see it, his headphones on, and the wind's just circulating. All the garbage is everywhere.
He makes the decision to field... he wants the wind towards his back to start the game, and that's what basically just flips the momentum of that game. Washington can never find anything. Their punter is shanking kicks. Sean Landetta is the player of the game because even against the wind, he's putting 45-yard punts in the air.
Chestnut checkers.
And that we've talked about that before when we watched those Super Bowls, too.
Yeah, and there was an old story. I don't know if we've ever covered this, and I may be saying it wrong. So Joe Clark, I know you're a historian. He pumped noise or wind into the old Giant Stadium.
Well,
there was just, I don't remember.
He opens the door.
Opens the door. So it was
before
wind.
Kicks.
It was before kicks.
He would
open the door.
There's a little bit of conspiracy theory that he would instruct Giants workers to open the doors, I believe, to the locker room, so then it would create more of a wind tunnel.
More wind out this way.
And it fucked everything up.
And that's why he would you know, defer to which side, and he would know, and then that's what the order got, So
And the old Giants Stadium, I've talked about this with LPG, talked about this with a few people, and you can agree with this too. The old Giants Stadium was more windy than MetLife.
Oh my God, without a doubt.
Without a doubt. It's still fucking windy in the parking lot, of course, when you're trying to tailgate, have a good time, and it's fucking cold and everything like that.
And we're taking shots, and I'm going like this, and it's going this way.
So of course it's still windy in the parking lot, but in the stadium, especially on a hot 85-degree day, and there's no wind,
the old stadium was 20 times more, and I don't know if it's like the blockage that comes out this way. Maybe the old stadium was a little more.
Maybe they designed it on purpose, or maybe they're just stupid. And
I'm gonna go with the latter.
Yeah, me too.
But yeah, I always loved that story that he would open the door to create more wind and more of an advantage.
I believe it.
Why not? I believe it too.
Yeah.
How are you gonna get caught back then?
It's true. If you ain't ready to play this game, then you ought to take a hike.
Yeah. Oh, great.
Says that before the Super Bowl. Love the way that they practice too. Leading up to it, what were you going to say about the quote?
Well, the quote is in like the intro of the Giants when they come out nowadays.
Yep.
You ain't ready to play this game. You ought to quit. Yep.
So obviously, Super Bowl 21 happens. One of my favorite stories is Phil Simms is talking about after the Bavaro to McConkey touchdown, where it goes off Bavaro's hands, falls into it.
Yeah.
Phil Simms, I think at that point it's 33-10. Phil Simms is saying, "We've won the game. We have won the Super Bowl." He goes back to the sideline. Bill Parcells says, "Simms, you can't take a sack in that situation." And then, like, he's like breaking down like the situation of that game, and Phil Simms says, "Who gives a shit?"
That was Simms' moment. You know he was waiting for that moment.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit? Just won you a Super Bowl, Bill. Yeah.
And I love how, despite, Bill Parcells, Phil Simms having their, their peculiar relationship throughout the years. They're finally up there. Parcells has the Super Bowl championship, and Parcells says the great Phil Simms. That's how you have to acknowledge him.
Yeah.
The great Phil Simms.
It's very cool too because throughout the whole movie, which you guys watch, and that whole season, for Phil Simms, that's a difficult thing, and he overcame it. And he worked hard, which you look at him, if I looked at him today, he was the Giants quarterback today, I would not think that he can get through like a Tom Coughlin.
Yeah. No.
If I'm put, you know, if I'm trying to like, and he did, and Parcells never had the greatest things to say him on the sideline, or even, you know, benching him for Scott Bruner, and to say the great Phil Sims is, I think it's pretty damn cool.
Yeah. So basically, by the end of it, one of the themes that I'm feeling is just like teamwork.
Yes.
It's kind of cliche, but I'm like, this is just a team, and the shit that they all went through and 30 years of losing, I'm sure they feel it. I'm really sure that they feel it. The organization felt it. So Bill Parcells said this: winning a championship will put you together forever. It's like a blood transfer. You get their blood and they've got your blood. When you think about that time, you can't think of it without those people.
It's unbelievable. It's such a great quote.
Yeah. It and really even though is. You only talked to three people through America's Game,
yeah,
like I felt it.
You feel it. And it's also cool that we, you know, the Joe Morris interview. And when we talked to him at the dime, yeah, he was saying all about the guys, how he's still close with all of them and everything. Mm-hmm. So Bill Parcells, when he says that, he's right.
Yeah.
Like, that shit lasts a lifetime.
Yeah.
You win a title like that, especially in the way they did it and in the season they had, and, you know, from the shittiness that they had a couple years prior, like building up to it. It's truly remarkable. It really is.
All right. Anything else?
I would like to get that feeling again.
I would like that too.
It would be nice.
Now, here's the thing. There's nothing like the first time.
No, there's
not. And that's what, and no, LT said, no, that this is always going to be the most special team that he played with. 07. I think if you were to even ask Eli, even though Eli wasn't as prominent, you know, that's I think that's the that team is closer. Like the 2017, the linemen, that team is closer than what they were in 2011.
I think so. I definitely think so. I think maybe Eli and Victor Cruz seem very close, but that's one thing, you know.
Yeah.
But you got your cliques in the 07 too. You got Bradshaw and Jacobs that are still like best of friends. Mm-hmm. The five linemen are still all close.
Yeah.
You got Tuck, OC, Strahan, they're all, it's something special. It really is.
So I think, and there's nothing like the first time, even like for us, because we already have our two that we've seen.
Yeah. You and the third, it'll be cool.
Yeah.
It'll be cool. But
three's a crowd. Three's company. A crowd.
Nothing will.
But nothing will top the first time. Thank you so much for watching. The next week is the 4th of July.
Yeah, we're off.
So we're off. So enjoy your 4th of July. We will see you in 2 weeks where we are talking about 1990-1991.
That's America's right. Game. And I like that one better. But
okay, fair.
Just saying.
Fair. All right, we will see you then. Keep on bleeding blue and snaps.
Fuck Tiki Book.
Hey everybody, it's Talking Jake here, and I want to tell you about a new podcast and video series you're not going to want to miss. The Deal. Every week, A-Rod and Bloomberg reporter Jason Kelly speak with big-time athletes, entertainers, executives, Maria Sharapova, Strahan, Jeter, and more. The Deal takes you behind the scenes into those worlds of sports, media, and entertainment. From Bloomberg Podcasts and Bloomberg Originals, you can listen to The Deal on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.